Okay, so this image is just like something to look at whilst the introduction is happening. It's not really about my talk, although it's an undercurrent. This is painted by a pair of Russian painters, Tversky and Ganashka, and they this embodies the idea of dark ecology and the kind of the failure of the romantic view of art. I just think it's a great image, so I thought I'd start with it. Okay, so as Sonia said, I'm interested in experimenting with individual low impact and low carbon life systems as part of some solution to aspects of our current crisis, which is of overconsumption and anthropogenic pressure on environmental systems. So my approach is speculative, it's also pluralist and critical. I'm very aware of any shortcomings that would come from a proposal to completely abandon a modern society or its systems of globalized production. But I guess I use the flexibility afforded me by my practice as an artist to identify and probe certain problems, test hypothetical solutions, and generate a feedback critique into the work itself. The work has some potentially academic elements, but mostly it's about speculation, and in some sense it's speculative design, which I hope will be evident in the presentation of the works. I think it's more important now than ever to speculate and experiment with new models that question everything from economic systems, societal models, ethical constructs, the paradigm of the progressive technological solution, etc. As we undertake the task of designing sustainable systems for human existence and coexistence on this planet, I agree that we have to focus or refocus our reasoning and approach away from a purely human approach, which is the premise of this lecture series, right? And which I'll attempt to address in some of the work that I'll show you in the presentation. But in order to develop modern approaches to coexistence, I think we have to carefully reconsider the previous 10,000 years of human history that took place before the Industrial Revolution. Because in the simplest terms, we could argue that 10,000 years was the last 10,000 years before the Industrial Revolution was on the whole more environmentally sustainable than that which has followed. Of course, there are huge dangers in constructing a rose-tinted image of a mythical golden age, if only for the fact that it was during these bygone times that the groundwork for our current crisis was laid. However, I do believe that in our search for modern sustainable futures, there are valuable lessons to be learned from the past. Unfortunately, it seems, however, that looking back in order that something might be learned from the past is a very difficult thing for the human to do. The paradigm of progress through technology is hard to challenge, as are all cognitive dissonances. We want to believe we can design a totally technological solution for the crisis, while simultaneously being totally aware that our technology has been and still is the cause of that crisis. Sometimes I think this is purely a question of human ego, the self-proclaimed child of the sun, who must always strive forward with no question, even if it means that our moment of highest glory we will collapse from exhaustion. The human being, as a living organism, is part of the solar economy, whereby all living things, including the things that we need to sustain our bodies, are made of excess energy from the sun. Don't worry, I will get to some pictures soon. I want to quote a good little quote from Bataille, Georges Bataille, the philosopher. It is the green parts of the plants, of the solid earth and the seeds, which endlessly operate. Endlessly operate the appropriation of an important part of the sun's luminous energy. It is in this way that light, the sun, produces us, animates us, and engenders our excess. This excess, this animation, are the effects of the light. We are basically nothing but an effect of the sun. I'll just finish my little intro, if bear with me. However, an abstract fixation with solar economics misses an important point, that sunlight must fall somewhere. There can be no absorption of the sun's excess in its conversion into living matter unless there is ground. And in the economy of life, the physical ground upon which life itself stands also necessarily becomes a mechanism of exchange, a substrate where elements and compounds are extracted from decaying rock and traded between organisms, a vast bank in which water is arrested in its endless cycle from sea and back to sea, a depository of living bacterial and elemental wealth, the soil. our relationship with the soil at the base level is at the base level of our existence, no matter how convoluted the technosphere becomes. In Timothy Morton's description of enmeshment in his book Ecology Without Nature, we can begin to understand ourselves as not being separated from nature. However abstract our human cognitive reality becomes, we still physically exist in a living system of biological niches. In order to wrest our niche from within the systems of nature, we manipulate the soil by farming to ensure that things that we grow to sustain ourselves have an advantage and prosper. But as human history unfolds, our methodologies of soil manipulation become ever more mechanically efficient and ever more invasive into the niches of other living things. This is then facilitated by the human's re-entry into geological time and the extraction of stratified fossil fuels, which are in effect the solidified solar past. Right? So I see the Carboniferous period as a kind of resistance against the sun's excess, thinking about the time of solar economy. The release of stratified carbon is a release of this excess of the sun. Knowing what we do about anthropogenic climate change, what if we were to attempt to decouple from the economy of global capitalism and the economy of stratified solar excess? Is it physically possible for the post-industrial, post-modern human to realign itself with the contemporary economy of the sun and the soil and survive? As a modern human and as an artist with a somewhat empirically driven sensibility, I wanted to expand on these thoughts and speculate whether or not this might be possible. To see what, if I actually put myself into this position of kind of like denying progress, what would be thrown back at me. So this brings me to the first project. So what I did basically was like set up a small agricultural experiment in Cornwall on a small piece of land, just 2 acres, and to see if I could actually design a system that would provide for me all of the food and things that I needed for living. And in order to do that, I had to write a bit of software. Because what I found was that in actually trying to design like a tiny self-sufficient system for one person, we can't actually, there isn't the data available to figure out what you actually need to grow. There's bits of it, but no one can actually tell you like how many square meters of land you need to produce one egg. So I came up with this little piece of software here. This is basically uses 2 data sets. One of them is about crop yields, and the other one is about nutrition from food. So you move these little sliders up here, and it gives you shows you how many grams that represents in a day, how many calories you get from that, how much protein, how much fat. So you've got wheat, barley, rye, potatoes, all the way through vegetables and through to the meat. And as you move these sliders up and down, a few different things happen. One is that you get a little map generated at the bottom, which shows you the kind of proportions of land which you need for to produce this stuff. And the other thing that it does is it divides. This is actually set up for a project I did in Wales. So it's dividing the land available land mass in Wales between the current population and showing how many people can survive. It's a little bit off the screen, I think there's a
projection,
I think it's all right, it's okay. And what you have to do is you have to try and sort of balance these boxes here. So you have to get a World Health Organization recommended diet. So when they go red it's too much, when it's blue it's not enough. And then you have to choose the size of your house. And the size of the house, if I just show you here, determines, if you can see the map at the bottom, determines how much timber you need to grow to like heat your home. So if you have 120 square meter home, you've got a large bit of forest that you need to grow. If you've got 37 square meters, it's a lot less. So I use this a lot in public projects, in galleries and museums to educate people about the sort of implications of different dietary choices. Because obviously you can like, you know, get protein from beef, which is very much more inefficient than getting protein from black beans, for example.